His name is Joy. And it just rains down on me that she brings joy to this that she does up here. She does it in a very joyful spirit. Let's give her a hand. I've told her this once before because it just jumped out at me when she did it, and I just couldn't help to notice the her name is Joy, and she does it in such a joyful way. Good morning. I would like to first thank God for allowing me to be here with you this morning. Of course, we don't take these things for granted. I also want to thank Reverend Mosley and his staff, Patty and April, for allowing me to have this opportunity to present to you all this morning a few things regarding my talk. I would be remiss if I didn't say Happy Father's Day, of which I am one. But of course, we're going to do a little bit more with that. We're going to do a little bit more with that during the service, okay? As you probably noticed from the program, my title for today's talk is From Genesis to Jesus, It's All About You. And as an overview, if I may, the perspective that I'm using with that is the fact that the Bible has literal meaning. I mean, it's stories, it's full of all these different stories, and beyond the literal meanings, I think that there is, and of course we know that there can be metaphysical meanings. And not only are there metaphysical meanings, but there are also metaphysical meanings that apply to you and me. All the stories. As a matter of fact, we think that the Bible is a compilation of stories that reflect our spiritual consciousness from Genesis to Jesus. And so we're going to look at a little bit of that today. But before I get into that, because I want to share three scriptural stories, if I may, stories from the scriptures to make the point that we have this metaphysical consciousness that applies to us and that we have states of consciousness that these stories can apply to our lives as well. But before I do that, what I'd like to do is to talk a little bit about the Bible. Because all great religions have their great books. Of course, we as Christians use the Bible, the Muslims use the Quran, Jews use the Torah, and of course, all great religions have their great books. And of course, we know that the Bible is a story, in a nutshell, of a people, the Israelites, from their journey, from freedom, from slavery and bondage to freedom, and all their trials and tribulations along that period. And of course, we think that too, our lives are a freedom of sorts, because again, some of the things that we know as of today, we didn't know years ago. And so we're constantly learning and growing in awareness and consciousness. And so we use the body as that kind of a tool, but just as important as that, we know that the Bible is a historical document. A historical document that we are using to use to understand the metaphysical meanings and in terms of our development. We use these insights and increase awareness and generate transformation in our lives. A few more things about the Bible. We know that it's full of parables, not allegories. And I think that that's critically important because I think a lot of times if you're not aware and conscious of that, you can oftentimes miss the point. Real quickly, a parable is a story, a simple story that illustrates a spiritual, a moral lesson. In a nutshell, a parable is an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. An allegory is a story, poem, or picture that can be interpreted to reveal a hidden meaning, typically a moral one. And so the Bible is full of these allegorical and parable statements and stories that we are to read. And sometimes we can take the literal meaning, which might or might not be the point, as opposed to its more sublime spiritual meaning. We as true students know that we must often look a bit deeper to a realization. So always assume a literal meaning can be akin to believing that a jolly old fellow with a white beard comes down the chimney bearing gifts for all during the latter part of December each year. But we do recognize, while that might not be true, we do recognize that there is a spirit in the air in the month of December. A spirit filled with love, a spirit filled with joy, a spirit filled with peace for family, friends, and strangers alike. And that spirit is just as tangible as those gifts under the tree. But of course, this is the real meaning of Christmas. beyond the places, the stories, the figures, and the events found in the Bible, there is too a profound and practical meaning that lies as well. We would be remiss not to look beyond the little and miss the real, true meaning of this great book that we serve as our guide. I should also say before I go any further that the Bible has its share of controversy. Different persons use, misuse, and abuse. Just this past week, I think a high political official uses to justify certain political policy. And so this happened. But we do know the Bible was conceived in 325 AD CE, for those of you who prefer. And I think it was called the Council of Nicene. And at this council, they pretty much took what books they were going to compose the Bible of. And in so doing, there were some books that were left out. And so there in of itself could be a bit of a controversy, because clearly, if I had a book that I wanted to be in and you didn't put it in, I got a little attitude right there with this book. And so in any event, we understand that there are some, well, I said there are those kinds of viewpoints. We know that there's many versions of the Bible. Sometimes when I'm back with the kids, we'll be reading a particular chapter in the chapter of the Bible and all the verses in it, and I'll pass out Bibles to all the kids, and we're reading the same thing, and we're reading different things because we have seven different Bibles. And it's a little frustrating because I have to stand there and explain why they don't say the same thing. And it's not the easiest thing to do because they seem to think that it shouldn't be as complicated as we sometimes make it to be. But again, the Bible very quickly consists of 66 books. We, of course, know that there's the Old Testament and there's the New Testament, and that the New Testament begins with the first four the books that we call the Gospel, which is the life and times of Jesus Christ. Of course, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John give their own perspective on the life and times of Jesus Christ. And so despite the occasional misuse, challenges confronted by the Bible, we still know it to be a most provocative, spiritual guide to this, our spiritual quest on this earthly plane. From Genesis to Jesus, it's all about you. Now, I'd like to start with these three scriptural stories. And the first one I want to start with is Cain and Abel. You know them. We've known them when we were going to Sunday school back in the day. But again, Cain and Abel are the sons of Adam and Eve. And Cain, in case of metaphysical, well, we use a book here called the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, and describes or defines Cain as possessive, selfishly possessive. And it defines Abel as breath. And of course, we know that breath connects with spirit. Oftentimes when we meditate, we say we should focus on our breathing. If a person gets angry, they're told to take 10 deep breaths. So we know that there's a connection between peace, between solace and breathing. And so these two brothers, were tasked with bringing offerings to God. And of course, God preferred Abel more so than Cain because Abel had more of a spiritual inclination with him. And of course, this anger came, and Cain murdered Abel. End of story. Okay? We think it's not really about two brothers named Cain. It might be about two brothers named Cain and Abel, but it's really about us. Because we have these sides of ourselves, the selfish, possessive side of words, as well as the very spiritual, higher plane side. Reminds me of the commercial where you would see the guy, and I don't even know what the commercial was about, but it was a little man on one side of the show to tell him to do one thing, another little man on the other side to do another thing. Of course, they didn't know it. We have those little men on our shoulders. And oftentimes, we are not guided by the most higher one. We have these choices, these decisions that we have to make on a daily basis. You made a very good decision today. You're here. You didn't have to be here. You could have been in a whole lot of other places, but for whatever reason, you came here today. And so the Cain, the possessive, selfish side of your nature, of our nature, didn't prevail, but the Abel side did. Oftentimes, and again, I can't stress enough how these decisions go on all day, every day. You could be driving in traffic. Of course, we have a very high density of traffic in the Washington metropolitan area. Somebody can come and jump in front of you. Startles you, throws you totally off balance. You know, the coffee spills in your lap. And of course, you want to get, you want to do all kinds of crazy things. But again, we have a choice. And that's what the story is really telling us. We don't just have to react. We have a choice as to how we respond. I think our former first lady says, when they go low, we go. And so we know that we have that option to go to a higher level. And we know that this story of Cain and Abel, while it might have been about these two brothers, is really about you and me. The story doesn't end there. Adam and Eve had another son. His name was Seth. And Seth means compensation or substitute. And so it just goes to say that while spiritual Abel was slain by earthly Cain, spiritual ideas will rise again, as symbolized by Seth. The undying eternal part of us will rise again and reassert itself. This is a war within ourselves that we will have to confront for most of our lives. We're constantly confronted by it to say as to whether or not we'll take a higher spiritual position or the more earthly realm. From Genesis to Jesus, it's all about choosing. The second scriptural story that I'd like to talk about today is one that just kind of really knocked me off my feet. No pun intended, no jokes. When I first heard it, and it's a very prominent here at Unity. I can see right here, I think, on the little table, the words I am. But it's taken from Exodus, the book of Exodus, the third chapter. The whole chapter, actually, but the essence of what I'm going to talk about is around the 14, 15, and 16 verses. But let me set the stage for you. Moses is about to receive the Ten Commandments. And he is about to meet God, or at least have this conversation with God, on Mount Horeb. Now, whenever you see a mountain mentioned in the Bible, you should recognize that it means one has reached a certain spiritual height or consciousness. Because one has to be at a higher spiritual level to receive the instructions from God. And so Moses has gone up onto Mount Horeb, and God has told him that he wants them to free the Israelites from bondage. He wants to take them to the promised land. So Moses asked the most natural, normal question a person could ask. Why me? Because he's a shepherd. He's a shepherd herding sheep all day. He says, I don't have the power, I don't have the money, I don't have the fame and acclaim to go up against Pharaoh, who is, of course, the mightiest, powerful figure in the region at that point in time. God, in essence, you gotta give me poetic license here for this paraphrasing some of the things, these scriptural references. But God basically says to him, I got your back. And because Moses is a very pious, a very spiritual, a very, very spiritual man, he that's enough. That's all he had to give. That's all he had to give. He could run with that. But he had another question. And this next question was also very natural, very normal. It was the same question you and I would have asked if we were placed in the same position. And that question was, what am I going to tell them to make them follow me? In fact, he said, that who shall I say sent me? At which point God says to him, I am that I am. Tell the children of Israel, I am has sent me to you. Now, think about that for a moment. If I was to ask you all in this room, when have you last referred to God as I am, and you raise your hand, probably no one would. If I was to ask you, I know you would. I know it would be one. But anyway, if anyone was to say to you, when is the last time you said I am for yourself, everybody would raise their hand. And so we look at this, we discern this spiritual nugget, if you will, to mean that when we use the words I am, we have invoked the God Spirit that is in us, and whatever it is we say behind those words. Again, we have invoked the God Spirit into whatever we say behind the two words I am. Just as God created the heavens and the earth and all therein, we create our world behind what we say and think behind the two words I am. As if that wasn't enough, and if you read the scripture, you see in the next verse, I think it's Exodus 3, 16, he says to Moses, this is my name forever. This is my name unto all generations. And so if he's talking to Moses about freeing the children of Israel and taking them to the promised land, why would they be concerned about forever and other generations unless It was for you and for me. Something to think about, but it just really floored me when I first grasped the meaning of the concept, because I've often in the past used it in a negative connotation, so I really had to become conscious of that and check myself out with that. Many people in many places have used this expression in different ways, and I don't even know if they understood the power or the meaning that they placed it in. One of my idols as a kid was Muhammad Ali, and he always said, "I am the greatest." And if you would ask any boxing aficionado who was one of the greatest fighters of all time, they would tell you Muhammad Ali. African-American affirmation was given to us by James Brown, who said, "I am black, and I'm proud." And I wouldn't even say that, he said, "Say it loud." Because, of course, when we say something, especially when we emit words, it has emotion and power behind it, it gives added emphasis, it gives added force to that thing becoming realized. And so again, I am, we should always, every single time, in this lifetime and the next, even when we're asleep, always say positive things behind those two words, because it is actually the God that sent us to speak. And God doesn't do bad. God doesn't do negative. God doesn't do unhealthy. God doesn't do any of those negative things that sometimes we will associate with those things. And so we always want to place them in a much higher, much more positive context. Even if we take a moment and look at some of the things that Jesus said, and I'm not going to give the whole verse, just a part, but it's made me wonder just really what was he saying. He says in John 8:12, "I am the light of the world." He says in John 4:6, "I am the way and the truth." He says in John 15:5, "I am the vine." Was he saying that he Jesus for these things? Was he saying that because I totally grasp and understand the power of these two words, "I am," I can manifest all these things I said? And if you remember, he also said that these things I do, you too can do, and greater things shall you do. Is that what he's talking about? Something to think about. From Genesis to Jesus, it's all about you. The next component of scriptural story I'd like to share with you has to do with the number 40. And I'm going to use three examples of it. 40 is a, you know, I occasionally read the Bible and this number 40 just always pop up to the point that I would say to myself, what's going on here? There must be something about this 40 because I constantly see it. In the Modern Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, it says that 40 means completeness, trial, test, discipline before a new era is to emerge. Let me say that again, because this is going to apply to all the three stories that I'm about to tell. Completeness, trial, testing before a new era is to emerge. My first person that I want to talk about is Noah. Again, you know the story. Noah, the world was so sinful and so deviant, God decided he wanted to destroy it. He asked Moses, he asked Noah, who was a very pious, devout, God-fearing man, to build an ark that he could save himself, his family, and to every kind of man. Noah, by the way, means, from the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, means rest, calm, peace. And when it's at peace with the Lord, he is protected. And so Moses does so, and of course God is going to destroy the earth with 40 days and 40 nights of rain. And of course Moses was protected. We take from that that an abiding realization of the one presence in consciousness who dwells in a secret place for the Most High. In other words, in the story, Moses built this ark, which of course is like a ship, but the ark that we build is through prayer, through meditation, through coming to church, through reading scriptural, religious, spiritual kind. We build our own ark within to protect us from those kinds of negative things from above. And so by doing these things on a regular basis, attending church, reading scripture, meditation, listening to spiritual music, we have in fact built an ark within ourselves, is the point. And in so doing, we become protected from all the winds, ill winds that might travel our way. The next character I have is Moses. Moses' life is full of the number 40. Now, let me say this about 40. While it might mean test, discipline, trial before the new earth emerged, we're not looking at 40 in its exact sense, because in some cases in the Bible, it refers to 40 days and 40 nights, and in some cases, it refers to 40 years. So we're looking at 40 as a time, as more as an application to a period, an application to a season, a period in our life, a season in our life, a time in our life, okay? And so, but it's just this 40, I think, in Scripture that drives our attention to. This is what we're reading. This is what we're examining at this point in time. Moses, as you probably know, lived to be 120 years old. If you divide that by three, his life is divided into three sets of 40. And he, and it absolutely positively was. The first 40 years is when Pharaoh put out a decree that he was going to kill all the Israelite male children. His mother got a thread. She put him in a basket. She put him in a river. And who would find him but Pharaoh's daughter? Pharaoh's daughter finds him, loves him, raises him, and he's, of course, raised in the lap of luxury. He has the best of education, but he still identifies as an Israelite. And one day he sees an Israelite soldier he sees an Egyptian soldier beating an Israelite who comes to his aid. He kills the Israelite, and he has to flee. He has to run for his life. And he does. His first 40. The second 40, he ran and he became a shepherd. He became a shepherd of sheep. And of course, as you can imagine, the life of a shepherd is one of long periods of thought, of meditation, of prayer, which is very important for what he was about to do, lead the children of Israel into the promised land. And so this period of rest and rejuvenation was very, very important for him to do the next work that he had to do. And then, of course, the third phase of his life is leading the children of Israel to the promised land. Now, what's very important here is that sometimes we don't make it out of that symbolic 40. We don't always make it to the proverbial promised land. Of the children of Israel who left Egypt with the parting of the Red Sea and all, only two made it to the promised land. One was Caleb, and the other one, I think, is Joshua. None of the others made it that far. Why? Because they still had remnants of the negative thoughts, of slave thoughts, of bondage thoughts from Egypt, which was not to be accepted into the promised land. You can't have that there. You can't get the second place if you still got your foot on first. And so, Moses didn't even make it to the promised land. He became angry at one point with God in the fourth part of his son. He saw it. God allowed him to see the promised land from a high mountain, but he never actually made it. And so not everybody makes it, but obviously you all have had your periods of 40, and here you are. But before we continue that point, my last figure representing 40 is, of course, Jesus Christ. And I'm going to close it down on this. After his, I think it was 18 years that he was, we'll say unaccountable for him, because he was around and showed people, he didn't know where he was at. From 12 to 30, no one knew the whereabouts of Jesus Christ. There was a lot of theories and speculation about it, but no one really knows where he was at. He reappears on the scene at age 30. And of course, his mission goes to 30 to 33. But before he could begin his mission, there had to be a couple things that he had to do. One of them was that he had to be baptized by John, who was the last of the old prophets. And it was almost like a baton handoff from John to Jesus. Because as Jesus said in the scripture, I come not to destroy the word, but to fulfill it. And so he had to be baptized by John first. And after being baptized by John, he had to go into the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights of prayer and fasting, a period of testing, a trial period, a period of discipline before a new era is to emerge. And so we know that as Jesus came out of his 40-day and 40-night ordeal, again, we don't want to get too hung up on 40 years, 40 nights, because it does represent a period. But as he emerged, he was given three temptations by the devil, or the so-called devil. We think it could have been his own temptation to defend himself. But he was first asked to turn stones into loaves of bread. Obviously, he would have been hungry, having been fasting for 40 days. And he says, man does not live by the bread alone, but by the word of God. He was tempted with jumping off of a temple and being saved by an angel, which would have been, which I think spoke to the fact that spiritual powers are not to be used to show off, which is what that would have been. And again, the third temptation, I think it was that he was placed upon a high mountain and shown all the civilizations, all the cultures, all the societies and communities, and told him, if you bow down to the devil, all this is yours, which was a reflection of one's egotistical needs or what have you. And he denied all three. And so again, we see where a period of testing, a period of trial, before a new era was to emerge, which you all have gone through in your lives, and I have too. In 1968, my mother passed. And, wow. That was a long time ago. I thought I would have been beyond it much more today. But shortly after that happened, I became a life consumer of drugs and all kinds of crazy aberrant behavior. And it was really crazy because I sometimes would ask myself, well, you know, that could have happened to you even if she didn't die. But I didn't know for sure, and I do know what did happen right after she passed. That lifestyle became my lifestyle. That went on for a while, and I remember, it's funny the things you can remember. I used to live in North Carolina at that time, early 70s I'm talking, when I used to live in North Carolina, and me and a group of buddies traveled to Atlantic City to work. There used to be a saying back then that you only went to Atlantic City for one of two reasons. Either you went to make money or you went to spend money. And of course you went to make money. And I remember walking down the street one day, and I saw this sign and it said, want to get high? And of course that attracted my attention. I said, forever, let me see what you got to say. So I walked over to the sign, and underneath want to get high, it says, how about a natural high? And so what is this? And then below that it says, transcendental meditation. Of course it went on to talk about when they were going to have a meeting, where they were going to have a meeting, something to that effect. I became upset because it wasn't what I was looking for. It wasn't at all what I was looking for. And I kind of felt a little upset because I had been suckered into reading all this crap at that point in time. But no crap was that. No crap was that because maybe, I don't know exactly because we're talking many years ago, but maybe between 5 or 6 years ago, I ended up taking a course in transcendental meditation in Northwest DC on Park Road. And I do meditate to this day. And what I thought was very ironic giving this talk this morning was that we just started earlier this month the meditation sessions that come before the Sunday talk. What's up with that? In any event, 40. We look at this 40-year period, and I say that to you as a period, one of my 40 periods where I clearly felt like I was tested. Just this moment right here, I was tested and clearly trying to show a bit of discipline and, of course, moving into a new era. We all go through it. You've gone through it. You wouldn't be here if you hadn't. You wouldn't be here if you hadn't, and you know that there are those who are not here. But we go through this 40 symbolic period to show that if faith has not been tested, cannot be trusted. If we are better to experience a trial or test, we must be mindful not to grow weary and give up, because it may simply be a divine test of our faith before going to the next level. To this point in our lives, we've encountered 40, the symbolic 40, where we have undergone periods of discipline, testing to get to where we are today. Yes, we will undoubtedly undergo even more, it is inevitable. It is a part of our earthly curriculum. However, as we emulate the lives of Noah, Moses, Jesus, we are given the blueprint that we may use to get to the next level. While these historical events have occurred, while these are historical events that have occurred, they are meant to give us guidance and direction that we too may follow along this, our spiritual quest and a certain plan. From Genesis to Jesus, It's all about you and me. Thank you.